right, welcome to another episode of Out from the Cube. We're north of 150. So we're, I think, maybe 154, 155. Very excited about today's guest. Joe's with us again. Joe, I think we're rolling on episode five or six. Together. Mm-hmm. And we've tapped into your network yet again. When Joe and I got together, you know, I've known Joe for a long time. So we're working on 6 or 7 years being friends and things like that. But when we got together to do the podcast, Joe threw out a bunch of names of people we had to have on that we needed to have a conversation with that people would enjoy listening to their experiences and perspective on leadership and coaching and brand awareness and team development and personal development and all this. And one of them was Derica Legg, who is with us today. And so, Derica, I appreciate your time. You were one of the first names Joe brought up that we needed to have a conversation with on those topics. And so I appreciate you making time for us this morning or today.
Of course. I'm delighted to be here. Thank you.
Yeah.
So top five has got to make her feel pretty important, right?
Yeah. Top five, right? So no, appreciate your time. And I've said this with all our guests for the most part, and hopefully it's not disrespectful, but I like it to be very conversational. I don't like having a 10 bullet points that we need to cover or 10 questions we need to roll through. I do like it to just kind of be spontaneous, but I do read people's quick bios on LinkedIn just to get a perspective on where they're at and what they're passionate about, I guess. But the couple things caught my eye when I read your bio this morning, and I guess I'm going to start with the rugby thing. So you're a rugby coach. Now I'm a sport person. I love all sports. I've watched all sports. I can't figure out cricket and I can't figure out rugby, right? those are the two sports that I know something is going on and something exciting is going on, but I don't know what's going on. So how long have you been involved with rugby? How long have you coached it? What level do you coach? You know, ages do you coach and things like that?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. Part of the reason that I got involved with it was because I knew absolutely nothing about it. So my sophomore year in college, a group of friends had decided they were going to start a club rugby team. I went to school at Loyola University down in New Orleans, and they asked if I wanted to join. And I immediately said, I know nothing about this sport. Absolutely. Sign me up. And so we asked a few of the New Orleans women's players if they would come and coach us, teach us how to play, teach us all the rules of the game. And they said yes. And so from my sophomore year in college up until, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, I played full contact. So, you know, I'm only 5'3", about 150 pounds. So I'm kind of on the tinier side and definitely got beat up over the years. And so eventually an injury sort of ended my full contact career. And that was about the time that I said, you know what, I'm not really ready to walk away from rugby completely. How can I still be involved in the sport? I'm not much of a rule follower, so I knew that refereeing wasn't quite the path that I wanted to go down. But I went and got certified as a rugby coach through USA Rugby and have been coaching now for, God, a little over 10 years. And so I have coached everything from 3-year-olds all the way up to, I think the oldest player was in her late 50s. Just beast of a woman. And so right now I coach the UC San Diego women's club team. And then I also coach the San Diego women's club team. So basically once you graduate from college, if you still want to play rugby, big cities tend to have rugby clubs for postgraduates. So that's where I spend a lot of my time.
So when you say your days of full contact rugby are over, is there something other than full contact rugby? It seems like that is what is not full contact rugby?
We call it touch rugby. And so if you imagine you could liken it to flag football, where rather than the full tackle, you just have to make the touch on someone. So there's all sorts of different sort of strategy and running lines and the way that you work together as a team. But I would tell you there is a World Cup of touch rugby. I have players on our team here in San Diego that have played for the U.S. national team and represented most recently in Malaysia. So touch rugby is a big sport growing here in the U.S., but a lot of us that either retire from full contact because our bodies need a little break, go over to touch rugby if we're not done playing. And then once you step outside of the U.S., touch rugby is a little bit bigger over in Europe and even down in the Caribbean.
Maybe the last question on the rugby thing, but did you have a background like in a physical sport like that? That when you're a freshman or sophomore in college and somebody says, "Oh, you want to try rugby," like that, you know, not having that background of that physical nature of a sport and you roll into it, was it shocking to you, or were you prepared for it, or how did you adjust to playing a sport like that before?
I don't have a lot of experience with high contact sports. I have played sports for as long as I can remember, and so there is definitely that competitive edge. There is that desire to be a part of a team and have that camaraderie. Mm. All of that is part of what drove me to say yes to learning something new, because that's probably another thing it sort of put on the list, is that I love learning something new. But I will tell you that our very first rugby game was against Texas A&M. And I will also tell you that the women's rugby team at Texas A&M, I don't know what they eat. I don't know how they train, but they are a very different size, speed and power than we were. And certainly in my first game. And so it was a rude awakening. That first game, I felt more like a speed bump than an actual player on the field.
Mm. Are any of these go ahead. Division I, are they scholarship? Is this all club?
Yeah, there are a few schools that are big enough, have gotten good enough now, where you can get a scholarship to go play rugby. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And that is a world wide sport, right? And I'm asking it that way because, like, American football is not. Now, I know other countries do play it, but rugby is worldwide, isn't it?
Yeah, this is definitely a global sport. I mean, it's got its roots in Europe, much like cricket when you talk about cricket. Right. But yeah, you could go to any continent and get a rugby match in for sure. Mm.
Okay, well, to pivot to what you do, but I'm guessing much of what you do professionally draws on experiences from, you know, competition, from sports, athletics, team building, coaching, leadership, like all the stuff that Joe and I are really into, definitely has kind of a foundation for us built on athletics and leadership and coaching and team dynamics and things of that nature. But I think your bio says that, you know, you're passionate about brand, building brands and building the teams that support, you know, developing brands. Why don't you just fill, I know that's very high level of what you actually do, but why don't you fill us in with what you do and how that plays out with kind of what I just said with your bio.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would tell you that a lot of the life lessons and values that I have today are definitely rooted in either the sports that I played or coached, and then sort of supplemented with the awesome, awesome experiences I've had throughout my career professionally. So when I graduated from Loyola, I went to work for Heineken and started in their corporate office up in New York, and then had the opportunity to travel internationally with them, work at the home office in Amsterdam for a bit. And I spent 7-8 years with Heineken before moving over to PepsiCo. And again, had great opportunity to move around the U.S., travel a bit internationally. That's how Joe and I actually met, our time in India together. Mm-hmm. And spent about 7-8 years there before I decided I really wanted to get my hands a little dirtier with startups. And so I went off on my own, started as a consultant, working with a lot of people that had a ton of money and great ideas, but had never launched a brand before. So whether that was standing in the lab working on beverage formulation or marketing plans or route to market or just distributor setup or actually selling to a customer, whatever it was they needed, just getting these brands that I believed in up off the ground and then scaling them. Mm-hmm. Throughout my time at both Heineken and Pepsi, I was very fortunate to work with some just phenomenal leadership development coaches, team development coaches, and always found myself really attracted to these individuals and the work that they were doing, and sort of kept that in the back of my mind. It's like, you know, this could be a cool career down the road, you know, after I get some more experience under my belt. And so as I was working with all these startups, and at some point in a startup, you start to scale, and that requires you scaling your people resources too. So whether that's adding new members to your executive team, expanding geographically, and now having remote teams. And it just sort of seemed like a great opportunity to go back and get my leadership development coaching certification from the Hudson Institute in Santa Barbara out here in California, and start to apply some of that passion around team and individual people development with now the credential and all of the understanding and knowledge and real framework around how to do that and help the startups that I was working with build that out as well.
What was the certification or that you got and from where?
So the Hudson Institute, there are several accredited organizations throughout the world accredited with the International Coaching Federation. The Hudson Institute Santa Barbara is one of the most well-known, and they've been around for years, credentialing lots of professionals that have decided to take what was, the coaching, I'll say the coaching profession, which has not historically always been sort of this rigorous credential and background and education, and that now has very much moved in that direction. The Hudson Institute has been sort of, towards the forefront of preparing and graduating coaches that are now grounded in quite a bit of research and methodology, so on and so forth, on how to develop people and how to develop teams. So I went back to school. It takes about a year to get through the program, get accredited as a coach, and then accredited with the International Coaching Federation to have all of that, those credentials behind what you want to do, what you're passionate about.
So I had the opportunity to work with Derek, and she's kind of downplaying what her role and her impact. So we worked together at PepsiCo for several years. And Derek has held several high level positions. And actually the first time I met her was in India. And the first time I really was introduced to her, thinking she's this rugby player. So I'm like, oh, here's this tough lady, right? I mean, but her, I think it was amazing to me how soft-hearted she was and how well she connected to people, honestly, that didn't even speak the language. I mean, she could go and talk to somebody from India and you would think that they were just carrying on a conversation. It was really neat to watch. I mean, just her ability to connect with people at all levels is pretty amazing. That's why she's, been so successful in her career and successful in what she's doing now in the coaching. So a lot to be proud of.
Yeah, when you say brand, when we start talking about branding and branding companies and products and services and things like that, when I read that in your bio, the first thing I thought of, and could be wrong, I thought of myself actually, and how my background in coaching and basketball, I watch a basketball game differently than other people because I spent my whole life has been wrapped up in that game. I look at it differently. Now your life and passion is around like brand and brand awareness and building brands. When you look at like commercials or different, stores and way things are presented and how brands are built, I guess, on Main Street, you have a much different lens. You look at things different than I would, right? Like, why are they doing that? Or you question, like, is that the lens that you have as you roll through your life and how you see other products, services, businesses building their brand up?
Totally. And I think each time that you start with either a new brand or a new segment or a new service, you now see that brand and that service and all of its competitors through that lens. Joe can tell you, as soon as you move from a Heineken to a Pepsi or a Pepsi to a Coke, wherever it is you're working, you are all of a sudden noticing so much more, from what's the billboard down the street to what's the commercial on television to where are things within a store. I mean, we walk into a store and we are immediately picking apart everything from what did that flyer at the front of the store have on it to which displays are up, who's beating us in displays, where are we positioned on shelf? I mean, everything. And I would tell you, even being in beverages for 8 years at Heineken, when I moved over to Pepsi, I mean, I had never looked at soda or water or coffee or tea, or I mean, PepsiCo's portfolio is enormous. But now all of a sudden you are just noticing things in a completely different way. And I think one huge switch for me is towards the end of my time at Pepsi, I led the business development team and we were largely responsible for all of the new items that PepsiCo introduces within the US. And so to take those years of analyzing and seeing a store or branding or marketing through this new lens and then now add in launching new products that are grounded in consumer need. And all of a sudden now you're looking at all the new things that are coming out, every single year from all different companies and sort of scratching your head like, who needs that? Or you look at a company like Apple and you're like, oh my God, I didn't know I needed that, but yes, I need that. So I think with each role, with each company, with each role, you put on a new set of glasses and see things that just never occurred to you before. Mm. Joe, I got to believe you experienced that when you moved from Pepsi to Coke.
It's very true. And actually, a lot of people would ask me, like, well, what's the difference between the two companies? And I would just say, honestly, there's really not much difference. It's the same problems, just different colors on the bottles, right? Mm-hmm. And that's all. The packaging just different. But there is no doubt. It definitely opens your eyes up to new things when you know, and I've been in the wine and spirits industry too. And when you walk in and you're, you know, when I was with on the beverage side of, you know, soft drinks, didn't really kind of pay attention to the alcohol industry, except, you know, maybe they had some displays that were taking up your spots, but you definitely look at it from a different lens. And it is, it's eye opening. It's great to have new experiences like that. That's for sure.
But George, you mentioned it, you know, coaching basketball. Mm-hmm. As soon as I started coaching rugby, I would say even as soon as I started managing people in an organization and realized that this was something I was passionate about, I am so much faster to be aware of what motivates someone, be aware of what demotivates someone, be aware of how people receive appreciation, be aware of how people give appreciation. I'm aware of like the different pieces of how a team can fit together all in that move from as a player, always knowing that, yes, I contribute something specific on the field and all of the other people, you know, the other 14 women standing on the field contribute their own piece. You move over with that coach lens and you just see people's strengths and opportunities in a completely different way. And it applies way beyond just sports. Yeah, right?
No question. What when for companies that are looking to build their brand or take the next step in their brand, what are things that people need to be considering? Like what are pillars? Like I know I'm interested in personal brand, like, you know, building, you know, that seems to be the thing right now. You know, I listen to a lot of Gary Vee and these other guys that are big entrepreneur people that are talking about, you know, 75 or 100 pieces of content a day on all these different channels and building your personal brand. And that's important. And I've kind of drank that Kool-Aid a little bit. Like, I think that you need to kind of own what you're doing, what you're passionate about, and create kind of an audience and do that. So, you know, to create content for people, I believe that to be important. But separate from maybe building personal brand, are there like absolutes as people are looking to build their business brand, their service brand, their product brand that are just absolutes that you go in and consult with and try to get people to consider?
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of commonalities between the two when you're building your personal brand or you're building your business brand. I think number one, don't overextend yourself. I see this a lot with startups. You know, you get this shiny toy of being able to get into 25 states instead of the two where you started, and then you overextend yourself financially or resources and you just can't keep up with what you just attempted to do. I would say it's the same for your personal brand. Like what is the area that you want to own, and make sure that you go deep there before you're thinking about like this massive whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I think the second thing, and you touched on it, if you're not passionate about all of that content you're building, if you're not passionate about all of the hours you're putting into the business that you're building, those days where you don't want to get out of bed, they're a lot tougher, right? Mm. And so I think if you are grounded in what is it that motivates you, what is your purpose in either the brand that you're trying to build personally or the brand that you're trying to build professionally or the two together, if you can stay grounded in what that purpose is, those tough days are going to come, but they're much easier to weather those tough days when you've got your North Star. And I think that's probably the thing that I talk to people about the most, whether it's individuals or it's CEOs or executive teams. Like, what is your North Star? Why are you here? Why do you exist? Because if you aren't clear on that, I don't know that you're going to make it through the really, really tough days.
So when you're talking to these owners, CEOs, et cetera, are you talking just from more so from a culture perspective in terms of True North, or you're talking from a personal perspective for them, or is it a combination?
It can be a combination. You know, there are definitely some organizations that I've worked with where the CEO is the visionary. I'll take Elon Musk as maybe the extreme, but that kind of a personality within an organization, you know, when I come across a CEO or a president that is also a founder, it tends to be a lot of discussion around values. Why did you start this? You know, what was your dream when you started this a year ago, 5 years ago? What was your dream for what it could be? What was your dream for what it was going to change? Or what was your dream for what need it was going to serve? So when I'm talking to CEOs that tend to be founders, or I'm talking to founders, It is a lot of conversation around personal values. What comes with that is how that plays out in your company culture, in your team culture, for sure.
So why is it that you think, I mean, because you're in that startup space and startups fail at a high rate, right? It's like greater than 90, maybe it's even greater than 95. I don't remember the math. I just know it's really high. So Is the reason they fail, is it the product? Is it the service? Is it what they're actually doing? Or is it the culture in getting people passion around whatever they're trying to do? What is it? What are you seeing in terms of reason for failures?
Yeah, I think there are a variety, but I think there are some common ones. Number one, if your product or service isn't grounded in consumer need, It's just not a viable business, right? Mm-hmm. So I think making sure that you're clear on, again, why do you exist? What if it's not grounded in consumer need? And again, we've both launched enough innovation at big, consumer packaged goods companies to know immediately which ones are going to be the duds, because we tried to make it the cinnamon, vanilla, chocolate swirl flavor rather than what is a consumer actually telling us they need, right? Mm. I think that's number one. I think the other reason that they quite often fail is getting, the allure again of that shiny new object. You want to grow as fast as you can. You're trying to get into new markets as fast as you can, and you're not being honest with yourself about the resources that you have at your fingertips, and just overextending yourself. Mm. I see that happen.
Is that a hard conversation for you to have with presidents and founders and CEOs that want to do that? And you're like, whoa, like slow down. This isn't this
could be the dream killer.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure there's a way to frame that, right? Like, and I'm not suggesting you can't do it, but it's not the right move right now. Right.
Yeah. And I will say it was really hard when I first started as a consultant, because you're sitting in that room with that person and maybe like one other family member or one of their best friends, and you're hearing all these great ideas that they have and why they're here and how passionate they are. And you sort of get caught up in that wave, and all you want to do is like help them get to that. Mm-hmm. And to Joe's point, so many startups fail. So many startups fail. Once you go through that a couple times, you start to realize that part of your purpose as a consultant is the fact that you're that objective set of eyes and ears. And so for me now, I very much take the position that it's my responsibility to tell someone that, because if there's any chance of your dream making it in that small percentage, you need folks that have done this a time or two to tell you when maybe there's a refocus that needs to happen, or maybe you need to ask yourself this question that hasn't occurred to you, or let me share an example of something that I've seen happen that I can feel us going down that path. That's actually my responsibility now if I want to set them up for optimal success. So I think that's kind of been the shift in my mentality.
So when you go in and do brand work and trying to get these startups going or these other companies going, and how much time do you spend with them? Because I think there's a similar passion with all three of us about kind of team development and all that. When you roll in as a consultant, is that harder work for you than it is to just start talking about, business and markets and branding and different things? But now you're actually getting into the guts of operation and team development. And to your point of making people feel valued and appreciated, and their work matters, and they're contributing, and they need acknowledgement, and they need to be motivated and demotivated, and all that sort of stuff that you mentioned, right? And you're rolling in as a consultant, probably with your eyes maybe on that, like it would be for me. I'd be like, hey, how are these teams working and running and managed and led and organized? Is that a harder gig for you to get into, or is that or do you feel comfortable kind of doing that with those groups?
Yeah, and I'd tell you the answer has probably changed over the past couple of years. When I first started consulting for organizations, it was usually very much a project or very technical skill driven. Okay, so either we're building you a social media plan, or we're working on your search engine optimization, or building out your website, or a 5-year, financial plan, forecasting model, whatever those things are. And so while I was sitting there seeing what was happening, especially the organizations that I've worked with over a period of months, if not years, I'm watching what's happening with their people, but in my mind, I'm there for a very specific purpose.
Yeah, right.
And as I took a greater interest in team development, in people development, and realized just how much this is my purpose and this is what I am passionate about, right, it's now much easier for me to go in and have dialogue with senior leadership, with HR managers, with folks on the team about happening with this team, what's happening with our people development, what's happening with our leadership development, because that's where my passion lies. So I think, you know, had you asked me this 4 or 5 years ago, the answer might have been different, but now these are the projects that I actually get really, really jazzed about.
Well, I would think that probably similar for all three of us. I mean, you can just have such an impact on people's lives. If people are spending this 8, 10, 12, 16 hour days working, not, you know, and weekends to get a product, service, or software out the door or whatever it is. I come from a mindset of, man, we need to do whatever we can to have these people enjoy this. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, and to have, you know, and to have people work together and to have them contribute and have them kind of do all that. Are there pillars? Are there bullet points? Are there things that, you know, when you're building teams up that you kind of roll with, like, hey, my experience tells me, you know, contribution, you know, work matters, you know, value, appreciation, things like that. Are there like things that you kind of roll with that are top level things in terms of building your teams?
Yeah, you know, you mentioned people sort of feeling motivated. We had a great leader at PepsiCo named Rick Almquist. He used to run, towards the end of his career, run the West for PepsiCo. And one of the things that he said quite often was, if you can make the people dance, they will make the numbers dance. Mm. It was so simple, so mm-hmm. simple. And I know that so many of my colleagues across PepsiCo that interacted with Rick could quote this because it was so simple and so true. Mm-hmm. If we could be maniacally focused on motivating people, on making sure that they understood what their role was, what their purpose was, and making sure that they felt valued for everything that what they were contributing, and that we knew they had a life outside of just these four blue walls. If we could make the people dance, the cases, the revenue, the profit, the good decisions, the extra hours when we're trying to do something, that would come. That would come because they would be motivated to be where they were. And so I think that has always been, we talk about North Stars, that has always been a guiding principle for me. You can make the people dance, they will make the numbers dance.
That's really good.
So as I've thought about different roles that I've stepped into that come with obvious, you know, financial revenue, sales goals and responsibilities, depending on the role that I've had, I have always tried to make sure that that's at the forefront of my mind, that if I can take the time to understand what this individual's contribution to the team is, where this person's opportunity is, you know, how celebrating the wins. I mean, that's something we do in sports all the time, right?
Oh, right.
Like we step off the field after a rugby game, and one of the first things we do is shout outs on who did what, you know?
Yeah, stop. I think that's a great point. Let me ask, I've talked about this point, and I'm driven by this point. I don't understand professionally why we don't celebrate like we do athletically. That whatever that Super Bowl is, like our software team just had this great release on December 23rd, and I'm sitting around going, we're going to celebrate the tar out of this sucker, right? Yep. We have to, because it was a Friday. We're not rolling on Monday on a new project without any sort of, you know, celebration, acknowledgement, recognition. So how do you do that? Like, what do you do? What works for you to make sure that you celebrate the successes, the wins that your team is doing with what they're trying to accomplish?
But I think there's a couple of things. Number one, this can't be saved up for a national meeting. Like, you can't wait, you know, 12 months to then celebrate someone. Like, it has to be regular. And so simple things like when we have a monthly full team meeting, there is a page in the PowerPoint deck, the very last page that says shout outs. And we open it up, whether it's a live meeting or a Zoom meeting, where everyone gets to shout out somebody else that has done something that has impacted them. It could be as simple as the analyst taking the time to run the extra report to, you know, somebody that helped me with my onboard, whatever it is, those shout outs. I think the other thing that's really important is the shout outs can't just come in your reporting line. It can't just be me as a manager telling Joe as my employee, hey, you did a great job, because it's going to be so much more impactful if Joe's hearing that from his three peers, how much of an impact he's having. And so I think creating this culture where people feel like they should and can share feedback, especially positive feedback, on a regular basis, upstream, downstream, side to side, whatever, That's pretty important. Mm. It can't just be saved up for a national meeting annually.
Totally agree. I had a boss, and actually she was really good at this. She started every meeting with recognition, little or big, but every meeting that she had, and it was once a week minimum. And that's what she started. And that was pretty powerful. People liked it, you know. Mm. But kind of goes to your thing. You can't wait one time a year. I mean, yeah, you get your bonus and people like that, but there's more to recognition than just the financial piece too.
I was just having this conversation with somebody the other day, Gary Chapman, the guy that wrote Five Love Languages, has also written a book called The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace. It's a little book. You can get through it so quickly. And in there, it breaks down, similar to the five love languages, that we all receive and give appreciation in different ways. And if you can take the time to figure out how your peers, how your employees, how your manager receive and give appreciation, and then just tweak and tailor the way that you're doing it to speak their language, God, it's heard so much. I'm not motivated by financial bonuses. I'm not motivated by awards. Mm. They're great. It's just not what motivates. Yeah.
So how do you motivate? How do you acknowledge? Or let me ask this a different way. Do you feel the person that says, George, I just care about a paycheck? If they want to acknowledge and recognize me, then they need to give me a bonus or they need to give me more money, right? That's what motivates me. Do you think that's true? Or do you think that I'm 48 and when somebody sends me a message on Teams or Slack or whatever we use and says, hey, George, I really appreciate you and I'm so glad that you're doing X, right? That I'm 48, like that still means a lot to me, right? And it changes my day. But, and so does everybody kind of work that way, you think a little bit, or how do you deal with the person that says, hey, George, I just want a bonus? Like if they want to acknowledge me, do that.
I think that's true for some people. And I think it's important that we all recognize that work represents something very different for each of us. For some of us, I had another great, great mentor at PepsiCo named Doug Todd. And he and I sat down and had a conversation talking about career path and all of these different options. And he said, you need to decide what work is going to be for you. Is work going to be the thing that gets you up and excited in the morning, that's going to make you feel fulfilled, that you're going to be passionate about? Or is work going to be a means to the end for all of the other things that you want to do that you're passionate about outside of work? Because that gives you very different guardrails to make decisions around work. And one's not better than the other. And so I absolutely have had people on my team that are at work in order to have solid insurance, have a solid paycheck, all in service for the other things that they wanted to do in life, around family, around service, around community, around whatever else, that this was about how do I maximize the output of you know, financial sort of.
We lost her. Are you there, Joe?
Output that I've gotten. And I think that's great, especially if you know it. If you know it and you're aware of it and you acknowledge it, and I know it, I love it.
Can you? And I'm guessing I know the answer to this. Can you have both? Can you be, you know, driven and passionate to wake up every day at 4:30 and grind it at work, but also have that be like, hey, I'm super into this, but I'm also doing this because I want this great life. You can do both, right? I mean, maybe those are the most successful people. Right.
Yeah,
that our passion round the clock and being driven by that 24/7.
No, I think we call that work-life integration when we can find a way to sort of stop feeling like we're taking off different hats throughout the day, but actually be able to integrate some basic needs around, you know, healthcare and financial stability, along with all of the other things that we're passionate about. I think it's awesome when we can find that kind of work-life integration, not work-life balance, work-life integration.
I heard that. I want to say I heard that from Tony Robbins at one point, that it was, everybody talks about this work-life balance, but it is the integration of it. It's like, hey, I'm working here, and how you integrate your family life and into everything that you do. And that was a real big perspective change for me on this, because it didn't make me, if you can figure out how to do that, I'm not saying that's easy, how to integrate your personal life into what you're doing, you know, 9 to 5 or whatever. But if you can find that integration point, I think that eliminates a lot of the pressures and stress that you might be feeling. So,
I think the first time I heard it was from Indra Nooyi, the former CEO of PepsiCo, who Joe and I have met and spent some time with over the years. And she quite often got that question as a mom as a woman leading a massive, you know, global multinational corporation. How do you balance it? Can you have work-life balance? And she quite regularly said, no, it's about integration. And if you look at that woman's schedule, if she can find a way to get that integration, yeah, there's hope for the rest of us.
Now, you, I mean, the one thing that you have me really think about, one, you should have your own podcast. I mean, you need to call that. You need to get the Derica show going. You have a great perspective. The one thing that I really like that you've said a few times is that you've been sitting down and you've got these great mentors and you're able to kind of recite these great life lessons or these great professional lessons from these people that you've spent time with. The one thing I really like is that the last gentleman that you mentioned that told you about, you know, these two perspectives of how to look at your work, that it was that he cared enough about you to talk to you about what you want professionally. Right. And I know you just kind of said it, and but that means a lot to me because I'm taking a lot away from this. Actually, I love Joe's idea of starting meetings with some recognition. Right. I really like that idea. I think that's a great idea. I like the idea. And you have me thinking about how, you know, that gentleman sat down with you and gave you that perspective and advice because he cared about you. He liked you, you know, he valued you. And it's like, hey, it'd be cool if you stayed here, but whatever you're going to be doing, you know, it's one of those things of, you know, I want to counsel you and give you some advice. Even if you end up leaving here, you have to do what's best for you. But to have those, it sounds like you've had some great mentors that have taken you along and really given you some great advice and great perspective as you kind of have navigated your career.
Yeah, I've been so fortunate. And, you know, I listed off a couple of them, mentors. I've listed off, you know, a couple of things that I've read. And I think for me, it's, there are so many people that want to give you advice, especially early on in your career. And then every once in a while, something really sticks. It's just sort of like soul shaking, like it hits a different point. Like, and whether you realize it in the moment when you're sitting there, or you find yourself just constantly thinking, replaying that conversation in your mind again and again and again, to just dig into that, dig into why is this thing, like, why am I going to bed, you know, thinking about this thing? Why am I waking up thinking about this conversation? What is it, you know, in that dialogue that really stuck with me? And I think when you're able to identify that someone has given you that gift, whether it's their time or a different perspective or a life lesson that they've learned, let that be sort of the catalyst for you to now take the torch and make sure that you pay that forward to somebody else. And I think that's sort of how I feel about where I am now in my career. Is I was so fortunate for so many years early on at Heineken and early on at Pepsi. And now how do I make sure that, you know, whether it's the Rick Almquist or the Doug Todd, how do I become that person for a few other folks so that we continue this ripple effect?
Well, I think there's two parts to that, right? I mean, it's the gift of giving that, but Derica, you've always been good at receiving that, right? And being accepting to feedback and to listening, because not everybody has that skill set. Yeah. I mean, you got to have a mentor, and you got to be able to sometimes ask the tough questions. And sometimes people got to deliver tough news to you, right? Like, and my experience, honestly, at PepsiCo was the same as Derica. I mean, she's mentioned several people. That is one thing that company does really well is the leadership aspects. The things that I know Derica has taken from there, that I've taken from there, has definitely helped me in my career. That is something they are very good about, giving, receiving feedback, mentorship, you know, just team development.
Yeah, and that's that culture you want to build where people are just in service to one another. Like, hey, I'm here to, like, whatever I can do to help you, whatever I can do to help you. A mindset shift I have taken the past 3 weeks, Joe, you hit on this and made me think about this, was the feedback. When you said Derica takes, you know, is good at receiving it and taking good feedback and all that. I've been typically very poor at that. Just like to call myself out. I like negative feedback, correction, you know, any of that sort of stuff, you know, like tough, really tough conversations where maybe I didn't do my best job. I struggle with that stuff. That's just self-admitted. I just don't. I wish I was better at it. But what I've done the past couple of weeks is when I do receive feedback on things I could do better, I immediately tell the person that I really appreciate them coaching me up. Right. And I say it literally like that. Hey, man, I really appreciate you coaching me up and taking the time to make sure I get better. Right. And I've said that to these executives that I'm working with now, because one, it just gives me a different, I take it like they're serving me. Like they're helping me. It's a different thing about me feeling like, hey, they're just coming at me and I'm not doing a good job. And it's still, I'm still not good enough. As opposed to, man, these guys care enough about me. They're coaching me up. They're telling me how I can do better. And I've got to take it that way and execute on what they're saying. But it's being able to take that feedback from people and being able, back to the point though, of creating a culture where people are just kind of in that service mode of helping one another and mentoring other people and asking questions of, hey, what else do you need? What else can I help you with? You know, how else can we get better? You know, that sort of mindset and creating that culture.
Well, I think you bring up a good point, right? I mean, you have to be willing to receive feedback. I mean, if somebody's going to give it to you, you want the person on the other side to acknowledge it. They don't have to agree with it, right? But they need that if they don't say thank you for the feedback, I'm not going to give you feedback again if I don't think you're listening or you don't think you care or whatever, and then your development stops, right? If I'm just going to tell you something and you're not going to acknowledge it, I think Derek, maybe your experience was the same, but that was something that they taught you at PepsiCo. Like if somebody's going to give you feedback, you need to tell them thank you for the feedback. You don't have to agree to it. You need to listen, but you need to determine whether the feedback fits. Maybe it needs a little tailoring. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's spot on. Maybe you don't think it's right at all. But at the end of the day, when that person's done, you need to tell them thank you.
Yeah, I totally agree. And then I read a book a year ago called Thanks for the Feedback. And there's this great visualization in there that if Joe and I sit down and he's giving me some feedback, if I can visualize this bowl sitting between Joe and I, Joe's depositing all of this feedback into this bowl. And then I decide at the end of the conversation, which bits do I want to take out of that bowl with me? So to Joe's point, I'm going to thank Joe for his time. I'm going to thank Joe for his candor, for his honesty, for being brave enough to actually share the feedback, because quite often that's actually the more difficult position to be in, the one that's going to schedule the time and actually share the feedback. Mm-hmm. And then on the receiving end, what parts of what Joe said to me do I want to take with me? Do I want to reflect on some more? Do I actually want to maybe put an action plan around? And what parts maybe don't resonate with me, either because I don't agree or because I'm just not ready right now to dig into them? And something about that visualization of this bowl sitting between the two of us, and that Joe is depositing things into that bowl for me, for no one but me, you know? And then I'm going to pick and choose which bits and pieces to take and tackle and think about some more. That metaphor would be helpful.
Yeah, no, I really like that. We have about 3 or 4 minutes left. And I guess two things that are on my mind right now. One, you've mentioned a number of books. I haven't asked anybody this question really before, I don't believe, and I'm not putting you on the spot, but it sounds like you're reading a lot of books I would be interested in. What are you reading right now? What's impacting you right now? What are you consuming?
Yeah, right now I am reading It Takes What It Takes. It's written by I just blanked on his name, but he's a great mental coach for a lot of elite athletes. Russell Wilson is one of his best friends.
Moad.
It takes what it takes. I got about halfway through it last night. It's sitting right on my coffee table. I'm going to pick it back up tonight. But that is what I am reading right now.
That guy is big time. I forget how I came across Trevor, and I forget his last name. But he's really good. He's got a story about, about Russell Wilson and how he kind of looks at things. And it was really, I wish I could remember it right now, but it was really, really good. Really impactful.
That's what's so great about the way that the book is written. I love life lessons. When you can tell me a story, the lesson just sticks.
Yeah, right.
It's so much stickier. And so much of the book is written in stories that he either has about his interaction with Russell or about his own life and things that he's gone through with different athletes and different places that he's lived and teams that he's worked with and clutch moments and everything that went into that moment and then after that moment. So the way that it's written with all the
stories. The story that he told, and I heard it on now I'll forget the name of where I heard it from, but it was essentially about the negative self-talk that we do and how Harvard has these studies about if I say something out loud that it's like 40,000 times or whatever gonna, you know, impact me, right? It's this idea of I'm on that kick right now, actually. My wife and I've talked about it. I've talked with it with our 3 kids. I've talked to it with Joe's kids and other people about this, about the negative talk we put in our head and the things we say to ourselves. And then if you say them out loud, how just much more damaging that is just by saying it out loud. And it was Trevor that said it, and it was a big Harvard study. And I thought it was really, I was like, man, that's really powerful. And it had me thinking a lot about the narrative that I say to myself, you know, of sitting there, you know, it's on that point. But what one thing, when I get phone calls from people above me, I immediately start telling myself I'm about to get fired. Always. I'm like, you are rolling into a thunderstorm. I don't know where it comes from, but I sit there and I have this story I tell in my head that I'm going into a firestorm and I better have some things lined up, or my resume better get ready, or who am I going to call? Like all that. And it's just negative. It's just this negative talk that, and that's the first example I think of. But Trevor was really good with that. The last question I wanted to ask you, and this is really off point, but you've worked for Heineken for a number of years, and there's this speculation that goes around with some of us that like to drink Heineken beer about why it's in a green bottle. Do you have any insights into why Heineken is in a green bottle? Because I heard it had something to do with the sun and shipping it over from overseas into the States, or any of that. Do you have any insight into the green bottle?
I do. Okay. And as soon as they tell you that, you sign in blood that you will never speak of it.
Oh, really? You can't, like, you know the story of the green bottle, but you can't tell us. Ah. That would be a great book title for you. The Truth About the Green Bottle, Heineken.
I like it.
All right, last question for you. I asked somebody this the last time I think we were together. You said earlier, and I do believe this, and Joe and I have talked about it, you are what you celebrate. You've got to have people in your life to celebrate that you can call and say, hey, Joe, this really went well for me today, or I got this, or this is going on in my life, and or whatever it is, right? You need those people that you can celebrate with. And so I want to use this last question for you to be very proud of something that you have done. What has happened to you professionally when you look back on it and you just sit there and say, that was, I did that, even though it's probably a we and a team and things of that nature. Maybe something you were a part of that you sat back and said, that was the best.
We can do a whole podcast on this.
I will use an example from about this time last year with the UCSD women's rugby team. So in my mind, my role as a coach is to make myself obsolete. I will not be on that field with you on Saturday or Sunday. And so I'm going to do whatever I can during the week, during practice, to make sure that you are prepared to make whatever decisions you need to make based on what you're seeing out on the field without me saying a thing, because I'll be on the sidelines and I'm not
side with the Buccaneers.
Sidelines.
Buccaneers head coach said the same thing.
That's right.
Yeah. And so about this time last year, we were on the field still playing full contact before the world had shut down. And the women were out there getting the snot kicked out of them. And all of a sudden, they huddled together, all 15 of them, after they had been scored on for like the 15th time. And they had a discussion. And they ran a play down the field that we have never done in practice, that we have never discussed in practice. And they worked their way all the way down the field to score off of this idea based on the type of pressure that they were getting from this other team, where they saw the weaknesses. And so to be down that many points that far into such a physical game, and to have, number one, the recognition of where the opportunity is, to have the, I'll say the guts to make a change that you know your coach is about to stand on the sidelines and say, what are you doing? And to get down the field to do it without any direction, just the 15 of you trusting each other that your instinct, that you need to follow your instinct and do something different. It was probably one of the proudest moments I've had as a coach.
That's cool. That's great. How can people track you down, Derek? Is LinkedIn the best way? Are there other ways people could get in touch with you and connect with you and learn more?
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn. If you want to talk coaching, my site is onthehorizoncoaching.com. That's onthehorizoncoaching.com. And then you can find me on Instagram. I'm Happy Sundowners.
Okay, perfect. All right, I'd encourage everybody. Derek, I can't thank you enough. Joe, you were right. Top five, right? So I really appreciate, Joe, you making this connection for all of us. And I encourage everybody to reach out to Derica and be connected with her on her platforms. And I really appreciate that. That's a great hour. I really appreciate your time. There's a lot to take away here and that I'm going to implement with my teams and me personally here shortly. So really appreciate that. Out from the cube, again, north of 150. I don't know the exact episode number. Reach out, Joe. All the information for all three of us will be in the show notes. And so please reach out to all of us. Hope everybody has a great week. Thank you.
Thanks, Derek.
Thank you.